Unmute. Let's see if that works. Does that work? Yes, it did. And there. Am I going to be able to get, we have a little bit of, am I going to be able to get myself and the other speaker on full screen?
Yes, Shanti Mai.
Can we do that now, please?
You may be in the gallery view. If you're not seeing yourself large, then in the upper, depends on how your screen is.
There we go. Thank you. Thank you for that. Om Shri Satche Mahaprabhu Ki Jai, Paramatma Ki Jai, Gurudev Bhagawan Ki Jai, Satcha Sangha Ki Jai. This satsang, I will address your concerns, your questions, your insights. And I just have a little point to make about a detachment that we were considering for the last two Sundays. I just got an email, and it put detachment in a whole new perspective for me, because I'm not sure how people see that. I see it as the greatest, broadest, deepest, simplest love. I'm going to turn my Skype off now. Wait, there. So we won't have any more of those swipe sounds. In my view, detachment is a transformation from attachment, which can be very specific and binding, to a love that even if a person disagrees, does not agree, detachment can still be in full operation, because you always return to that equanimous love, that love that's like the sky, that holds all of the planets, all of the stars, all the possibilities openly in its being. Space does, holds everything in its being. And that is the love that I'm speaking about. It holds everything in its being, whether you agree, disagree, like, or don't like. Those are all very quick passing considerations. And when the love is equanimous like space, all considerations just drop into it and dissolve. And there you are in a spacious love. Don't have to feel anything, doesn't have to be emotional, doesn't have to be anything except for equanimous, like light running through space. So in this email, I got, it was so wonderful. One woman of the Sangha just had a child, very beautiful little boy. And her view of detachment was that she no longer has to worry about being a mother. She's detached from those ideas. And she says it makes it so much smoother and so much, these are my words, but this is the sense that I got, so much more at ease than being attached to the idea of how she has to be, that she needs to be worried whether she's going to be a good mother or not, or whether she's doing the right thing or not. I never saw a detachment in that light, but I think it's a beautiful light to see detachment in. It's just delightful that it can change a young parent's needless concerns, really, and transform them to let's get on with it day by day and love this child as we do and not worry about it, because love will guide us. There's no doubt about it. So no doubt about it comes with detachment in this case. I thought it was really lovely. So I'm going to, let's see, I'm going to wait until the hands are up, and we'll see how it goes. This satsang will be up to you. Well, looks like nobody's there. I have nothing to say. Oh, here we go. All I have to do is say, you know, in the satsangs in India, it's really interesting because I don't mind to wait for a while. Silence is a very wonderful place to be together. Wonderful. And sometimes it's a little like waiting for a late train in India, you know, you just... So in India, during the satsangs in India, all I have to do is take a glass and take a sip of water, and then it's just magical. And here, all I have to do is say, we're not going to have a satsang because you're not participating, and two hands will come up immediately. Where if I don't say anything, it might be a 10-minute wait. So I don't know why that is, but it is as it is. Gilad, namaste.
Hello, Shantini.
How are you? You're going to have to speak up a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you hear me okay now?
Yes, better.
First of all, thank you very much for everything and the Upanishad, the new thing in the...
Oh, the Upanishad, the Isha Upanishad.
Yes.
How many names it has, too. Isha Upanishad, Sri Isha Upanishad. And, oh, yeah, so many. It's beautiful, no?
Yes, so beautiful. Thank you for it.
You know,
I want to ask you, I had something, the story is not so important, let's call it a customer that every day call and have some, make some headache. Some are correct, some are not correct, but, and then in the weekend I had the same, communication with him, with WhatsApp or SMS. And I saw it Saturday, and in the weekend I like to be very quiet. So somehow I felt angry. And I wake up, I make meditations, some other things, pray. And then I open it. But before I open it, all the time was sitting on me. And I felt that I look at it in a negative way.
Oh, good for you. I know where you're going. Go ahead.
And then I open it, and it was something also that made me negative, but it was less than what I thought, much less. And I felt very strong that I don't have, that I don't want to have this feeling, and I felt it came or come from very, very deep inside of me. And normally I'm almost quite calm, let's call it, regarding bad feeling, bad thinking, and all this. But it nothing was extreme, but it was not, but it not need to be, let's call it in this way.
Yes.
So I would like to ask some guidance of what to do with myself, in myself.
You know, when you have those experiences, you have the opportunity to come to peace in yourself and know that you're going to get through it, and just skip all of the negative, because it's a transformative time when it comes to this is where I thought for sure you were going. Is that, yeah, this is so heavy on my mind, but really, I love the point of blessing the person. It is like a beautiful bird flying through space. And it'll be received, whether it's acknowledged or conscious or not, from the one that you are. You know, thank you for bringing me this, for the opportunity to change my habitual reaction. Do you remember the Buddhist statement? And it's so, so wonderful. Transforming adversity into favorable conditions. I say it again, no problem. Transforming adversity means difficulty.
Okay.
Hardship into favorable conditions. And you're the only guy who can do that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And there's another statement, and it's not just statements. It's not just something you set in your head and say, oh, that's the way it is. Literally, you'll have to, you don't have to, you can if you want to. It'll be good if you do. See how you bring that forth out of yourself. Then there's another statement, and it's a very good statement, and it's a true statement. It's a gem. I shouldn't say that it's a statement. It's a gem. So is transforming adversity into favorable conditions. Transforming adversity into favorable conditions. This is a Buddhist way, and it's a very, very beautiful way, because it shows you that you can, when you will, make a difference for yourself and for other. Hmm? The other gem is, and I don't call it a statement anymore, it's a gem in the treasury of the way. There is nothing against you. Everything is for you. So you take those two jewels and you consider them, because sometimes people say, well, how? But the beauty is that you find out how. That's the real beauty, is you test it out, see where it goes, and see what you can transform also for the person who is bothersome.
Thank you for it.
Well, you're welcome. Repeat after me. Transforming?
Transforming.
Adversity.
Adversity?
Yeah, adversity means whatever's against.
Yes.
Into favorable conditions.
To
good conditions for yourself and for other. And you find out that, wow, I have the ability to truly make a difference, not only in my life, but in the lives of others. And you know that you have that for your own life. You know that. You have transformed much, Gilad, much. From the time I first knew you until the time I saw you here in Teradasacha, I was very touched by your... Well, let's say your transformation. Very touched. Very touched. And I loved you before and I love you after. That's easy. Yeah. Love is easy. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for all the...
Well, why don't you keep me informed as to how it goes? Just a little bit.
Okay.
Okay. I would love to see how you go about that.
I will do.
Okay. Namaste.
Namaste.
So we have Yashodhara. and Shrimananda.
Mama Lord.
Yeah, I have.
Okay.
Are you guys on or not?
Yeah, namaste, Shanti Mai. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you too.
I had a very inspiring moment when you said this about the children, because I took so many times. So for both of my children, they are now adults. And how she said this, I can really feel this detachment.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it's so beautiful.
Yes. And I've never looked at it that way.
Yeah.
To be detached to parenting.
Yeah.
And move day to day in that love that she has for her new son and her husband, the love that he has for his new son, and how that alone is enough. Never have to worry, never have to push. Maybe sometimes worries will come up, but you don't have to occupy yourself with it.
Yeah. And the thing, what I just immediately get, I was there as an observer. I just watched and I was so catched by this beauty of this movement of the small baby or then running baby. And I just felt love, a lot of love. And I found out if I just keep myself back without any judgment, just observe, that I can stay in this silence and this beauty and see the gift the child is giving to me each time.
Yes.
So it's like a master. I still say it when I have my 20-year-old daughter. She gives me feedback so excellently. Perhaps I don't like it at the moment, but then if I'm in silence, I say, wow, I'm so thankful.
Yeah. And I hope that you disciplined your child and guided your child, because it seems to me that children run the parents these days.
Ooh. Yes, right.
That's just the craziest thing in the world.
Yeah.
And well, as you say, there's many gifts for my child of wisdom, and there are, but the child really needs guidance, really requires guidance, and actually loves the guidance of their parents, you know?
Sure.
Yeah, I think that's going to shift soon, where parents, again, you know, if you don't do something well, they're going to show you how to do it well. They're not going to say, okay, no problem. You'll get it one day. You don't. Maybe you will, maybe you won't. But guidance is very important for the child. And love is the guide, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you have to be very, very clear what you like and not, and you can express it.
Yeah, that's right.
And they see it and they feel it. But if you're very clear, it's very easy. If you're not clear, then it's very difficult.
Yeah, that's very difficult. Yeah. But we know the difference between right and wrong and what's hurting our child and what's not hurting our child. So I don't, you know, this thing about, well, of course, it's there. And this about being concerned about whether we're doing it right, if we're going to do it right, if I'm going to be good at it. I can understand some of that, but I cannot understand living under that hardship that one is creating for themselves, you know, about their children.
But I come back to my question, which is behind this, is
okay.
I have desires. I have desires in my life, or can say needs in my life, like
a
child.
Oh, wait a minute. We're not going to go there. You're not going to get away with that. They're either desires or needs. Needs.
Yeah.
Does not necessarily mean desire, and desire does not necessarily mean need.
Okay.
So let's start over. Go ahead.
Okay, I have needs like I'm hungry, I'm thirsty,
Yes.
Needs like this, which comes from my body, and I enjoy them, and I really like them, and I don't want to suppress them. But I can't.
How could you suppress drinking water? And
no,
having...
if I'm hungry, I can say, okay.
Wait a minute. Let's talk about the real thing here. We're not talking about food and water, are we? Go ahead. Not going to do it. You can't dance around it. It's not. It's better that you bring out what it. Maybe you don't need to do it for Sangha, but you have to do it for yourself.
Yes.
What is it really that you're talking about? It's not.
I'm really talking about my sexual desire.
That's more like it.
What?
That's more like it. That's truer than the need for. This is not a need. This is a desire. And this is not a requirement. This is a desire. And it's not like food and it's not like water. So go ahead.
I can't say anymore if you say this so clear. What can I say?
You can say, I can say, it's very good to be true to the one you're with. And as you would want them to be true to you, for one thing. I don't know if that really touches on anything or not, but I'm going to say it because I think it does. And you should not let your sexual desire run your life. And when sexual desire is met with love, not just I see Natalia laughing. Not just because somebody's shaped nicely or has a beautiful appearance, but because you are in your heart with that person. You have to be careful. I mean, pornography is a real disease. It is a real disease. And it has created men that actually can't, from what I understand, from men that cannot really relate to a partner. And it just burns that area. And then that area burns your life. So I would say basically do not permit sexuality to control you. That you control your sexuality.
Yeah, I have this very strong feeling now. I'm 64. It was when I was 25, it was different. But so I found out also some kind of meditation where I could come down with it. But now it always comes and I enjoy it that it comes and I say, hello, there you are. I'm happy that you are because it's kind of life force. And I enjoy it without doing anything with it. Mm-hmm. So, but in a way, it's also in my mind that I like to do something with it. And then I, you know.
Yeah, you should talk to Osho about these things. I have no idea. I'm not,
yeah, even, not, there
I'm not even interested in your sexuality, I'll tell you the honest truth. You know what I'm interested in? Huh? That God pervades everything in the universe. Every single thing in the universe is not other than the divine Lord. That's what I'm interested in. I could care less about your lower chakra. Anybody's, not just you. Don't take it personally. What I'm really here for you for, Shimanand, is to raise your awareness to who you truly are. And as long as you're, nothing wrong with being sexual. I have nothing on it one way, this way, or that way. it's not my reason to be with you. My reason to be with you is much deeper than anything that your body could react to or feel, that your heart is immersed in what the great masters, Shantimai, you know, following them, standing on their shoulders, for you is to remind you of what you already know and to lift yourself to that space so that you know what to do with yourself. Sexually, non-sexually, food-wise, non-food-wise, desire, non-desire, need, and not need. You will know perfectly without any guilt, without any shame, without any of this, without any of that, where you are and where you have always been and where you shall always be. That's my reason to be with you. And what a wonderful thing that we have there.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, you can read some Osho books. I think he really, I know
a lot about Osho.
Okay, but I think he really addressed this for his Sangha.
Yes,
and I think he addressed it wisely for his Sangha. I don't think his Sangha acted wisely with his information. Some did, some didn't. Who knows? But he did offer this wisdom to you. So you go to one of his books and look it up, and you come to Shantimai when your heart is bursting in true desire for the wisdom of your self nature.
Thank you.
I love you.
Thank you. I love you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Sahara, you have your hand up. Hold on, Swamiji. We skipped one guy.
Oh.
Good to see you, Swamiji. Sahara, what did you want to say?
Namaste, Shanti. Namaste.
Shantimai, yeah. One word, by the way, not two words, not Shanti and Mai. Shanti Mai is my name. Go ahead.
I surely know that my microphone is going on and off.
Okay.
Namaste, Shanti Mai.
I can hear that. Go ahead, Sahara, please.
What you brought initially about attachment and non-attachment, that's been maybe for everybody an ongoing exploration of how that moves.
Hold on. I want to say something about it. This particular time, Drupada said this particular time, people go very deep inside to find out what detachment is. You know, he's a Jyotish. He's looking at planets and stars and all of that. And he said to me, very deep, everybody will go very deep to find out what detached love is. Go ahead, Sahar.
And what Shimananda brought with the conversation about what the difference between desire and need.
Yeah, and yeah, that's right.
What arises for me in that conversation is that attachment is interwoven with desire. I don't know if they're exactly the same thing, but they surely present from the same aspect, and that needs can be fulfilled. Desires cannot.
Desires can be fulfilled, but they will not be satisfactory in the long run. And then there, you know,
right,
that, in the Upanishad, this is very beautiful. In the Isha Upanishad, along the mantras, it says in one of the mantras, it says that the truth, I'm ad-libbing, so I can get a little off, so don't hold me to every word, but that the truth, capital T, is behind a golden disc. Remove the disc so that I can see. That disc is your desire. So even the last marvelous desire, the best desire that you can have on earth, has to be relaxed so that you can truly see. Excuse my yelling, but I really want to get this point across for those who are willing to receive it. And for those who are not willing to receive it, you're going to hear it anyhow, because one day you're going to be willing to receive it. And that's why you're on the path. That's why you're on, along the way. God bless you for that.
Oh, Shanti Mai.
Anyhow, I disturbed you and I interfered, but...
Not the least.
Yeah, remove the golden disc, which is your last beautiful desire. Huh? Not just who am I? I have seen who I am. I don't know what that desire is. If it lingers in the heart for something, remove the disc. Remove this golden disc that I might see. Very deep, very deep, very beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And that the desire for the golden disc is an unfulfillable desire.
Yeah, that's right. That's why you have to relax it. That's why he says remove, huh? Remove. Because in a way, desire is attachment. In a way, desire is... sometimes you can desire the very best thing. You know, desire is a multitude of spectrum. It has a multitude spectrum of multitude. You can desire the very best for the whole world and go to sleep very well and not bring it up until tomorrow's prayers. You know, so desire for the world to come to kindness towards each other. You know, this desire is very beautiful, but it melts in space. It just melts in space, follows space through, and you don't have to think about it all day, all, you know, the wars and the horrible and this and that, because while you're looking at it that way, you're not doing anything for it. No. But looking at it that way and distressing yourself over it, we rise in the light of love, we rise in the light of love that everyone eventually shall come this way in peace.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Then we pretty much forget the world, actually.
Oh. And spending that time orchestrating a strong enough feeling about something one is horrified by in some aspect is of no benefit to that situation at all.
No benefit at all. Neither to you nor to that person. No. Yeah, desire is an interesting thing. And all of the Buddhist texts and the Indian text and the Zen text, do away with it. Don't have it. See what's there when you don't have it. And you go,
but there are still lots and lots of Hindus and Buddhists around. somehow they keep coming into being.
And Christian mystics also, Sahara, and probably I don't know enough about Islam and the Muslim way. I don't know enough about the Quran to say. But I would imagine that every non-religious religion that has a mystery to its heart would say that lay down your desire. Lay it down. Don't let it hanker, you know.
Oh,
yeah.
And I shared with you some time ago. We were watching those videos from those wonderful videos on the Hindu teachings and stories from the Vedas and the Puranas. Right. And there's a specific story of one of the great rishis. And the gods kept coming to him and begging him to be conjugal with his wife, because there was an entire aspect of creation that would be unavailable to him if he didn't participate in the Brahmanic
sexuality
creation.
Yeah.
So there's an aspect to that is fundamental, but how is surely a matter of great consternation to probably everybody who's ever taken a body at some point.
No, that's true. And there's nothing wrong with sexuality. There's something, when it's twisted, it's a very difficult thing. Huh? When it's twisted for gratification only, this instant gratification idea. I think this, my view is, this is the reason that the Mahatmas said, give up desire, because it's the instant gratification that never, ever settles in the soul. Never. It just makes one want more. Again, whatever it is. Even look at the billionaires. They cannot stop wanting money. You know, what is that? I mean, I could understand somebody in the world wanting a, you know, an even and good income and living well, but even billionaires who can do all of that, you know, just can't eat enough money.
No.
Now, that's not true for all. Anything that we say is not true for all. Watch it. Huh? But yeah. And then also, Sahara, I feel that when the Mahatmas and the great masters have said to give up desire, then you get to actually look at your desire. And I think that's a wonderful thing in itself. It's not just to let you run away with it, but you get to look at it and you get to consider whether it's beneficial for you or other or not, right? Or not. Anyhow, thank you for letting me talk a lot.
And there's the deep aspect of sexuality that is how the sacred aspect, which is, it is how souls enter this multiverse. Like it is.
Yep. And hopefully they realize the non-dual aspect of their self nature.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Very important. And some children are born like that. Ananda Maima was born like that.
Oh.
She was born totally aware. And her body was born. She was never born. So we're going to get it right here. Okay, so thank you, Sahara. Thank you. You gave me something to move upon. I appreciate that. You didn't speak very much, but I appreciate you bringing it forward. Let's go to Swami Jupiter. And Adhikari will be the last. Please don't raise your hand. Please don't. We've had enough time. And we'll complete the satsang with Adhikari. Hey, Jupiter.
Namaste.
Brahaspati.
It's good to see you again.
Good to see you too.
I'm having this feeling like it's not a choice to come for satsang. Or it's a deeper choice. And even today, I think I told you last week I'm hitchhiking across Argentina, so I'm in a cafe right now. I apologize if there's any background noise. I didn't think about any of this, but I picked a cafe. It's called Essenza, which means the essential.
Sure.
And it says, there's quotes on the wall. It says, a good conversation is essential. Mm-hmm. And on the other wall, it says, good company is essential.
Oh,
and,
yeah. Oh, yes.
So it's very like intuitive, I guess, that I chose this place. And I just want to connect with what's true. I want to know what's true.
You already know what's true. It's embedded in your soul. I say to my Sangha, I'm a reminder, knocking on your heart, reminding you what you already are well aware of deep inside. So may I have the opportunity, I don't know, to inspire, ignite, bless, that you discover. I you started it out very beautifully. Satsang is not a choice. Well, or if it is a choice, it's a deeper choice. There's a time when you become choiceless and you just move with what you know is true in your heart. You won't lie. You won't cheat. You won't manipulate. You won't compare. You won't judge. maybe discern for sure, but you won't entertain yourself with judging other people or any of that stuff anymore. It's just worthless. So that's the way it is. You're on to it, Swamiji. You're on to it.
I know. I know. I forget. Okay. I experience these bouts of forgetfulness and depression and sadness. I come out of it. Yeah.
You know, my view of depression, I don't know about the psychologists, but I bet they agree that depression comes from wanting things to be differently than they are.
Yeah.
And that's probably one of the poison roots. And you're a guy who can see that that's useless.
Yeah.
Because it's not different, because it is as it is. And I would say to you, be careful about getting entangled in the world on any level.
I get that, yeah. It often it's connected with some kind of desire.
Mm-hmm. You're a lovely, lovely man with a flame in your heart that's very bright. Thank God for everything.
And I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yes, be grateful for what you have. Gratitude is one of the nicest apartments in heaven and on earth. It's just one of this. And it's genuine. It's not airy-fairy nonsense. It's really genuine. So,
Totally. Yeah,
that's what I would say to you, beautiful, beautiful soul that you are.
I watched the interview you did with Ian, what's his name, Unconscious TV, quite a few years ago now, and a few other things. And it seems like every enlightened being that I know of has a moment, you know, they have an awakening happen.
Yeah.
So I just thought your story in this factory, in the canning factory, was really interesting.
Now, mind you, an awakening is one thing, and enlightenment is another. And the great master, Chanul said, the moment that you put your foot on the path, you've already had an awakening.
Several, yeah. But I would never claim to be enlightened.
That's great. You are. You were born enlightened. Everyone is fundamentally enlightened. This is the discovery that, oh my God, it's always been this way. And it'll never be any way but this. And everyone not only participates or partakes, is the whole of the story, is the whole of the dreaming, is true to the core of their being. May not know it, may not be aware of it, may not even be interested, but it's true.
Well, that seems to be the catch. It's like, okay, I am enlightened, but do I know it? And if I know it,
You're never going to know it. You're just going to be what you are. Why suffering? Hey, I can tell you, I've been suffering for 3 months now, really severely, severely.
Yeah.
Nityananda Maharaj died of cancer. Ramakrishna Maharaj died of cancer. You never know what your prarabdha karma brings, but you can bring yourself out of suffering. My body's suffering, but I'm fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Be careful. Watch what you're thinking. Because it all has to do with how you think and what you bring into your life through those words that pass through your mind that you totally believe in.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they misguide you. I love you with all my heart.
Likewise.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and walk with you through Argentina. You'll see me in the birds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
you'll
I like
you'll see me in
I
the
like
birds.
that you record all the satsangs as well. It's nice to listen to them.
Yeah, that's a good thing. I think people can't always. Some people never come in like we do on Sundays, but they listen all the time. That's what I'm told by them, that they're, oh, I hear a song. I'm glad you do. I pray that it serves you in some fashion. Be kind to yourself. Be very kind to yourself. God has created you uniquely in all of the universe and all of the world and all of time.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I love you.
Love you too, Shantana. Thank you.
Okay. Take care of yourself now.
You too.
Okay. Namaste. Hey, Adhikari, what a sweet little jacket you got on there. Nobody can hear you, Adi. Just turn on your mic.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you are. Hey, Adi, how come you have two Gayatri Yantras on your wall?
That's because sometimes when I was doing that, I was standing up.
I love you. You drive me crazy sometimes, I tell you. What a wonderful person you are. Go ahead.
Anyway. I wrote you about this, but I just wanted to say that transmission of the Isha Upanishad was one of the most marvelous transmissions I've ever heard. I couldn't say that about other times, but the thing I want to speak to is I think one of the sweetest words in the world is no other.
Yeah, not two, huh? No other.
No other than God. No other than, I mean, I don't know. It just gives me goosebumps. And you know what? People were talking about desires and all, I really feel it takes away desires. Because it's
of
like.
Of course it does.
Yeah.
I would say it in a different way. Do you mind?
No, go ahead.
Yeah, it calms desires.
Yeah.
And then it's easy to dissolve them into, particularly the desires that are like hankering little demons.
Yeah, I give you an example. I used to desire strongly that my son have children. It's not going to happen.
Can you imagine why?
Well, no, His wife-to-be, getting married, has had a hysterectomy. But anyway.
But what is it that you, because you want to be a grandma, and that's a sweet thing, that's for sure. And Adhikari, you could be my grandma, even though you're not, but a couple years my senior, maybe a year my senior. I'm going to start calling you Granny Adhikari. No, but you know, that isn't that a futile desire?
Oh, it's futile. I mean, I in some ways I really felt I wanted it more for him than me, because he wanted to have children and he loved kids.
How could you want something for somebody else like that, that they should produce a child? This I want for you. And did he want that?
Yeah, he wanted that.
Oh, then you were in cahoots in the world of desire. I get that.
But it just, I was walking down the road yesterday, and it was his father, and he was pushing his baby girl who was laughing like crazy, and his little son was running by him, and he said, I'm going to be doing this for the next 10 years. And I tell you, I had the greatest delight in that. I mean, he's himself, those little kids, he's my son. It's just a small little example.
But it's a good example. It's a very good example, Adi.
You know, it's just, there's no other. I mean, it just makes me cry. But you're the one who, that transmission is just so powerful. I want everybody in the world to listen to it. I must have communicated to everybody I know on Star Media please watch that. I mean, these people.
I love how Swami Nikilananda, he stuck this term in. I don't see how he got it in Sanskrit, but I'm not a Sanskrit scholar. So, but I easily can understand some of the words in Sanskrit when he said, you should, no, he didn't say you should know. The Lord should pervade. The Lord should pervade. Wow, Swamiji, that was powerful. You should know that. That by now, you should be fully aware, fully 100% aware that there is only the Lord. He, in the Upanishad, Brahma, the great mystery, God is called the Lord and Brahman. I couldn't get over the point. I never got over the point of the first sentence. You know, I think to me, it's like the greatest gift that the rishis and the mahatmas, whoever wrote that Upanishad, could ever offer into humanity.
All of this.
All of this, whatever moves, and that which does not move, is pervaded, imbued by the Lord, only God. Renounce, enjoy. This is,
no.
I mean, what a beautiful, whoever thought that your renunciation would be enjoyable? Of course it is. You're free of it. You're away from it. You're out of it. You're no longer saddled, chained to it. Renounce it. Renounce this judgment you have on everyone. And you're going to judge people, but it's going to be like a line drawn on water. Take a bowl and draw a line on water and see what happens. You don't have to empty your head of all of this. You just must see, if you want to see, the uselessness of it. Isn't that wonderful?
Total joy.
Yeah. Renounce.
Enjoy
your renunciation. I just think whoever did that was very clever and very right, very, very straight.
It wasn't in this Upanishad. You've got me falling in love with the Upanishads. It was the other one that talked about Lord of Love. I love that. Lord of Love. Love is the first expression.
So yeah, that's right. And it's not emotional love. Yeah. It's realization of the true one without a second.
Yeah.
Yeah. The totality of all. I don't think love can be any more delightful, normal, more exquisite than equanimous love. Because it always falls upon you. It blesses you. It baptizes you every time you have a moment that you think that you don't. It'll come upon you when you are dear to that non-emotional, exquisite beauty that has created all of this. It will always serve you. Always serve you. Always. Well, if you want to hate, you can. But I would suggest that you don't.
It's the love that has no other. I remember
there love was... that has no other, that's right. It's the ultimate self-love of all, because all is the self. And that's within you right now. Jeanette and Blanche, that's within you right now. Now, it's not going to be made. It's not going to become. It's the fact, and it's always been the fact, and it shall always be the fact. So the Mahatmas have said, and why have the Mahatmas have said? Because they've realized profoundly, look at Krishna, I am. Worship me, love me, come to me. He's always talking about coming to yourself.
Yes. Amen.
Yeah. Amen.
That's right. Boundless gratitude to you, Shanti Mata.
I love you. Take care, Adhikari. Antisa Jensen.
2 weeks in a row.
What's that?
You said my last name 2 weeks in a row. It's still a little strange, but...
Well, it's easy to say it's your last name. I mean...
But I also, having been in Denmark for 12 years, I'm not used to hearing it the American pronunciation. So it kind of rings in my ears.
Is it like Jensen?
Yeah. I've gotten very used to the Danish pronunciation. So when I hear the American,
surely.
I'm like, oh. What's
on your teeny tiny little mind?
There were two things.
Brilliant, brilliant little star inside your head.
The first thing was your conversation with Sahara, which reminded me of a satsang that we had over the summer. And I think I asked you this question. I may be taking credit for someone else, but I think I asked you what do you see as being the biggest obstacle to realization? And you answered wanting it. And the whole room was like, and I thought that that was just absolutely profound. And it blends into this topic so well of like, even that big massive desire, the gold plate. Mm-hmm. You have to also surrender, release that. I found that to be just so simple and so incredibly profound.
Well, the beauty of that statement in the Upanishad is that you arrive at the golden disc. And that you serve what is undividable in all beingness in your life. And that's why you give up these notions of judgment and comparison and who's good and who's not and blah, blah, blah. All of this kind of sticky drama that insinuates that duality is reality, and it's not.
Yeah.
It's a playground, but it's not reality.
Yes. You spoke a couple weeks ago, I don't know how you would say this, a thread of words that has stuck to my heart, that... non-attachment is potential. And I very much experience.
Let's just say it this way. Detachment is.
Potential.
Potential.
And conversely, I would say that desire is almost ignorance. It's because it blinds you. There's a certain limitation when you have an object to your desire. And I had an experience of this when I was younger. I used to really want to be a mom. Like up until I was 33, entire life was curated around future children and the future father of my children. Like it was.
That sounds like Adhikari, and it seems to me to be a natural.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then I went through a spiritual awakening, and what catalyzed that actually was healing my relationship to my mother. And when I healed my relationship to my mother, I no longer had a need for children, because I found out that the underlying desire behind my desire wanting children was to prove my mother wrong. And when I no longer needed to prove my mother wrong, that desire disintegrated. And what was so beautiful and that came after that is that I realized that I didn't need to have an object to my desire for the desire to exist. So for me, this, when you say for a desire to calm, had I gone forward and come hell or high water, had the children, it would have created in a way a limitation for me. I don't think that this is true for everyone, but for me, I got to see when I released that desire, or released the object of the desire, that I already was a mother, that I was mothering many instead of one. And it opened up a whole new world in my life that I could never have designed.
That's true. Every woman childless or with child is the divine mother.
Yeah.
Every woman childless or with child is a divine mother.
Yes.
Isn't that right?
Yeah. Yes, and when I'm out in the world, I see children, they feel like they're my children. Like I may not have birthed them myself, but I instinctively mother them.
I'll be your child. Can I be your child?
Sure.
I'll be your child, and I'll be, and Adi Curry can be my grandma.
You make a great family.
It's wonderful. Antisa, I don't know if anybody, when I started and said your teeny tiny little mind, I saw some people like, ooh, you know, they should know our relationship.
The smaller it is, the better.
Yeah, well.
This is my mind.
You have, all of you, I have to say it for everyone, Antisa. You have what it takes to come to the simplicity and depth of the heart, to realize that no matter what happens in your life, that you live in the grace of God, because as Krishna said, God lives in every heart he dwells, not just Krishna, but that which is, you know, Jesus or Buddha or your family or your neighbor or your ancestor or whatever it may be, that God dwells in your heart. And you have exactly what it takes to come to see that that is true.
I have reverence that can't be put into words, because I think that of all of the people on the planet, you have been so exquisitely precise in helping me, because of course I have a brain. In many ways, I'm a cerebral person.
You do?
Yeah, and I have found in my own life that it is so subtle how sophisticated we can be in conflating our thinking with our direct experience.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And I cannot imagine, having gotten the awareness that I have experienced in my life, had you not poked at that particular thing in me, because, you know, being masterful isn't about knowing everything. It's about being empty. And I have very much appreciated both the learning of that and the humility of that with you.
Let me come in here, Antisa. And from my perspective, whatever my is or whatever that is, there's an incredibly beautiful innocence to everything, resistance, sophistication, insistence, comfort that I don't have to bother with this. You know what I mean? But it's also an exquisite innocence, and it is all God. So whatever God is, whoever God is, however God is playing out every part, every body, every molecule. I just want to say that what you said about, and you didn't call it resistance, but it's also seen as a beautiful innocence until one refuses to see it a different way.
I think once you have direct experience, anything other than that just feels instantly insignificant by comparison.
Totally agree.
I had this come through to me last spring and it's very much related to how you often define receptivity, is to neither believe nor disbelieve, neither agree nor disagree, which I have co-opted and used very much in my work as well.
Good.
You don't, when you experience something, you no longer need to believe in it or not, you know, like it's not up for discussion.
The beauty of it. That's right. Yeah. That's right. Who needs my analysis?
Yeah, exactly. It makes opinion completely futile, really. I mean, there are things that you can observe. Of course, you still see things, but you're not speaking of the topic of satsang today. You're not attached to any of it because you have your experience and you also hold your observation quite loosely.
That's right. And I would add that you're poetically add that your soul is embedded in the light of God's grace, and you wouldn't misuse detachment in the sense of just flagrantly doing as you damn well desire to anyone you damn well desire because you're detached.
Right. That wouldn't be detachment for me. That would be...
That's right. No, that's right. That's right. But let's say that someone may call that detachment.
Detachment that's... for me is surrender. It's actually being completely consumed. It's not about you over there and me over here. It is actually about I am porous, we are one. There is nothing to attach to.
That's right.
It's for me, they're worlds apart.
Yeah.
But it's true that I think that there is a lot of performative detachment, which is really avoidance.
Well, the Mahatmas call that misunderstanding.
Yeah. Yes.
So I'm going to depart. Oh, did you want to say something else? I'm sorry.
Oh, that's it.
Thank you so much, Antisa. Thank you all for your really wonderful, wonderful contributions to Satsang today. I really appreciate, every one of you. Yep, what a gift. What a gift, what a life, just to know you. Okay. Namaste, everyone. Yes. Thank you. Yes, it's you. Come on, Pradeepji. Well, wait a minute, Pradeep, before you begin, I want to ask two questions in the gallery. Is that okay?
Yes, yes, please.
Okay. So, where's Amrita? Did the fire go to your house in Malibu? I can't hear you. I can't hear you. Please, if you don't know how to turn it on or something, just write me a note.
And now can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Yeah, well, the people that are living in my house are part of the fire brigade in the canyon.
Okay.
And they stayed with the house and put out the embers because it was burning all around. And some of the houses in the canyon did go, but not very many.
But it's amazing how that house always gets through these kinds of terrible disasters. It's
amazing. Can I tell a story about you, though, Shanti Mai?
If you want to.
Well, we wanted her to have the best bedroom when she came there. And she ended up sleeping out on the porch overlooking the mountains where all that fire was. Every night, she never came and slept in the bedroom, in the bed.
No, slept on a mat. Because the stars were too beautiful and the night was so lovely. Yeah, that's right. That's right. And thank you, Amrita. I really wanted to know about that. Give Mike my love. And I want to ask Sanaz, there's an email for you. Yeah, okay, good, you know it. Namaste, everyone. God bless you. That's already going on, I'm sure. Namaste, namaste. Wonderful. Thank you so much. Yes. We love it when you play for us. Thank you so much. Namaste. Namaste, everyone.
Namaste. Mm-hmm.